Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. What does culture mean to you? What's the impact of trauma from generations past on children today? How can elders help transform the impact of trauma on today's youth? Jeremy Fields is founder of Thrive Unlimited. He's leading a two-part session on healing trauma in Native American communities that's hosted by the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. The free event, it's open to the public, and you can attend the final session on March 4th in the Serbeck Center Ballroom on campus. That event is sponsored by the university's Center for Inclusion and the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. Jeremy Fields is joining us today from inside the Black Hill Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City's Black Hill studio. Hey, Jeremy, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hello, good morning. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about how you got into this work and the first time that you heard intergenerational trauma or historic trauma and kind of started to figure out what that looked like in your life and in the lives of others.
Okay. Well, I would say my involvement in this, like working in Native communities, began as soon as I graduated high school. I started out as an artist and a musician visiting Native communities and performing. And the more that I did, the music that I was making had a kind of a socially conscious message to it. And I began to get requests to come in to kind of get youth motivated and inspire them to something better. And in doing so, I came face to face with a lot of the well-known difficulties that we face in a lot of our reservation communities, you know, high suicide rates and different things of that nature. So over the years, I just becoming more and more well-versed in the ins and outs of how that functions within our communities with youth and adults, you know, I began to steer my attention more towards trying to find solutions that would help, you know, culturally relevant solutions, and how is it that we help ourselves lift up out of these difficult places. So that was kind of my beginning in it. As far as this term of historical trauma, I do recall hearing that in my younger days when I was in high school and things, and I didn't feel that it attributed to me. You know, it was something that I felt was kind of seemed like ancient history. You know, that doesn't apply to me. That was my great-great-grandparents or something to that effect, you know. And so it didn't really hit home with me until later in my adult years. And I would say this is probably just within the last 4 to 5 years as myself being a father and witnessing my children become affected by a lot of those difficult situations within our communities and trying to get to the bottom of what it was that was hindering their mental and emotional well-being, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really what opened the question wide open and really made me take a look at my own life and upbringing and my family. And that's really what kind of opened Pandora's box, so to speak, of everything that had been going on and really opened a vital conversation for the entirety of, I guess, what we would refer to as Indian country, you know?
Yeah. So when you first open that, do you find that you know, you've opened that box for yourself to think about things in a new way? And really, you know, it's a story that maybe, you know, you don't want to have. I don't want this to be part of my history. I want a different, better, more empowering, you know, more reasonable history. Do you find that other people that you talk to, other young people, elders, also have this sense that when they hear historical trauma, that they're just now coming to realize, and the non-Native community is just now coming to realize, like, what the impact of that is in a new way? So talk a little bit about what we know now that we didn't know about the science of this, for example.
Okay. I think this, you know, the term historical trauma has been passed around, you know, quite a bit over the past probably 10 years, I would say. But I think clarity of understanding about it has been very absent. What I'm finding as I'm and my colleagues have been going around the country and facilitating this conversation is that it seems very new even to our own people, you know. And I had recently had a conversation with a non-Native colleague down in Arizona, I want to say this past summer, and he was trying to get an understanding of where this was coming from, you know, because he too had heard the term used over the course of years and things, and he was saying, what is it that is bringing about the difference in what you're doing? And I was telling him, I think us as indigenous people within our own communities are coming to a much clearer understanding of it beyond statistics, beyond this is what happened to you. These are the events within history that caused all of the hardship. But what we're doing is really taking an in-depth look at the organic transitions and transformations that it's brought about within our families, within our personalities, and within our communities as a whole. And one of the analogies that I used was, in my own understanding, I would always relate that term trauma to vehicle accidents, because I would always hear it on the news and you would think of something very abrupt that changes the trajectory of your life or your well-being. And so I used that analogy and I said, you know, if this were, you know, the totality of this historical trauma for Native people were to be related to a car accident, here and now today in 2019, when I had this conversation with him, we're still flipping in the air and the vehicle hasn't hit the ground yet. You know, that's kind of the nature of the effect that it's been having within our communities and how prevalent it still is at work within our families and our homes today, you know. So that being said, it really brings a vital conversation to the table to say, if it really is having this tremendous of an effect, we really need to get a hold of it and understand what it's doing. So what we're, I guess, in that analogy, what we're trying to do is make people aware, open up your eyes and realize we need to brace for impact, because if we don't, something worse is coming, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's already come to the point that it's begun taking our young people's lives because they're not able to answer for the sadness and the heaviness that they carry. But that's what we've been handing them when we're not aware that this trauma is working within our communities and our families. So
this is heavy work for you too. I was watching some of the videos that you have online and just the stories that people tell you when you have trainings like this about sexual assault, about suicide, about lack of services, not having anyone to talk to. There's a weight of that for you. How do you take that weight and transform it into something positive instead of just, you know, a stone around yourself that's going to sink you to the bottom?
Yeah, it is definitely heavy, you know, and I think that's something that myself and all of my colleagues, you know, we do encounter and we do endure. I think for myself, my own traditional culture would be my answer to it, you know, because that I think through this understanding of historical trauma and how it's affected our families, it's given me a much deeper and greater understanding of what our culture truthfully represents in its purest form, you know, in terms of spirituality and personal grounding, those types of things. So I've been able to find a very solid center, I would say, in those things. So participating in ceremony and even just taking that time daily to meditate and pray and making sure that I stay centered, you know, and not allowing the vicarious trauma to run away with me, you know, because it is difficult, you know, when you hear these so many stories of your own people, your own relatives and the hardships that they've endured, you can't help but resonate with it, you know, because it does hit very close to home. And we do form a lot of very close relationships in the process of this because there is a level of vulnerability that we bring to the table in the way that we share our own personal stories. You know, as I said before, we don't, you know, necessarily reflect upon statistics or, you know, historical dates and things, but this is me and my colleagues standing, you know, in front of the entirety of Indian country saying, here, let me use my life as an example. Let me help you to understand how it is that it intricately affected my family and how does this resonate with you, you know? But I think that's one of the powerful things about it is that it creates an objective conversation that isn't necessarily so invasive to individuals' lives, but it's kind of a model that they can bounce their ideas and their experiences off of and kind of have a safe space to begin processing through their own trauma. But I think that being said, though, it's one of those things where it does take, you know, some constant vigilance and awareness in our own space to make sure that we're not overrun again by that vicarious trauma or have that heaviness inundate us to a point that we don't feel like we can continue forward, you know?
Right. So let me use my life as an example. That's takes courage.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure you're a humble guy, but I'm going to say it. That just takes a lot of courage for everybody who's doing that work, for people that we've had on this program talking about missing and murdered Indigenous women, for people who have come and spoken about trauma. I'm just sometimes overwhelmed by the courage and the humility with which people share those stories and say, this is about more than me. And how does this resonate with you? That's big stuff.
Thank you.
You mentioned traditional culture. as an answer to this. And I want to dive deeper into that so that other people, non-natives and indigenous people, can start to understand the impact of reclaiming daily practices, anything in your life that has to do with traditional culture. And you can explain that in ways that I never could. So could you start there and just really dive a little deeper into why that matters, why that is a pathway forward?
Okay. So I would say that the key reason why it is so important is because that creates our foundation for resiliency. Anything that you encounter in life, there has to be a foundation that you return to that is kind of your solid ground to stand on and lets you know that you're always capable of bouncing back and recentering yourself and finding your way back to wellness. How it is that culture comes into play is a very important conversation, especially for us to have within our own cultured communities, because ever since Indian Removal Act, from that time forward, one of the things that's happened is that, you know, we know about the boarding school generation, we know about forced genocide, assimilation, all of these different things that changed the trajectory of how it is that culture played a part in our lives. And we had generations of our people that were taken away from family, sent away, taught that it wasn't okay to be who you were born to be, basically. We had our culture removed, our language removed, all of those things. And ever since that time, our culture has been slowly handed back to us in fragments, you know, religious freedom acts, things like that. You know, those are things that didn't come about for, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years, depending on which one you're looking at. And all of those things are kind of newly given back to us when we really look at the timeline of it. So moving forward in that fragmented space, it's kind of created blurred lines when it comes to culture. And for a lot of our people, unfortunately, our attachment to culture has become something external. It's been something that we put upon our person in the form of beadwork or traditional regalia when it comes time, you know, when powwow comes around or when ceremony comes around. And oftentimes we find ourselves going through motions. And when we have those questions of why do we do this or why is it this way, oftentimes even our elders aren't able to answer those questions for us. So it kind of becomes a bit of a costume and a shell that we hold to try and find that meaning and the depth in it. But a lot of times those lessons and those values have become very thin, you know. And one of the important parts of the conversation that we facilitate is taking all of those things off of the table and what does it mean to be Lakota, to be Pawnee, to be Arikara, or whatever the case might be. When all of those things go off of the table, when it's just you there and your person and the doors are closed and there's nobody else, what does that really look like? What does that mean? You know? And one of the ways that we frame that conversation is to be able to say, you know, when we look back in the past and we've all seen those images on posters and history books of these black and white photos of these just staunch, powerful leaders that we had in the past, what is it about those people that really inspires pride within you, you know? Mm. And people will say, well, you know, you could tell that they were fearless, you know, that they were integral people, you know, that it was at all costs they would do what it was that it, you know, needed to be done. And even just that, to be able to say here for all of us in present day spaces, how many of us are really in a space where we're willing and able to make that kind of commitment to our people? You know, within our daily lives, within our personal character, how many of us are really willing to be that upstanding and that integral that there are no excuses, you know? Mm. And that's a difficult conversation to have because there have been so many outside influences that have affected our community. You know, one of the things that we face a lot is these high rates of alcoholism. You know, that was something that didn't exist within our communities in pre-Columbian times, you know? It was something that was introduced and became a coping mechanism as all of this came about and changed our communities, you know? So it's difficult even for us to be able to acknowledge a lot of those hardships that we see even every day in our lives or that we've endured, you know. And, you know, what you had mentioned a little bit earlier about, you know, being brave enough or courageous enough to be able to share those stories, it is really difficult, you know, mm-hmm. for myself and my colleagues that function along with me in facilitating this conversation. None of us have lived perfect lives. You know, all of us have been products of addiction and abuse, and we've been through the thick of it. And that's one of the things that allows us to, I think, facilitate it so well, is because the conversation that we're having is very sincere and very honest. You know, we're not coming from a place of, this is what I read in a textbook, or this is what the university told me. Yeah. This is, in my case, 39 plus years, excuse me, of personal experience.
If nothing is done, you know, if trauma isn't dealt with, if you try to ignore it or deny it or pretend that we can just get over it, as sometimes we're told, what happens?
That is the worst solution possible, I would say, because I guess for us as Indigenous people, speaking to our Indigenous people, when you look around in our communities and the hardships that exist there, that's the evidence of what happens. Yeah. All of it is manifestations of us not being allowed or not being capable of healing because of the things that were taken away or not given back. And when you're not able to heal, the only thing that you learn to do is to distract yourself and to cope, to get by to the next day, you know. And even for the underlying concept of our company, Thrive Unlimited, the reason why we chose that name and the concept and the mission of it was to be able to say, you know, all of our lives growing up, we were taught that we came from survivors. You know, that's always the conversation. You came from survivors. Be proud of that. And yes, absolutely, I'm thankful that the people that we came from had the capability of doing that. But at the same time, what allowed them to do that was meant for something different. It was meant to empower them to live fully, to live boldly, to be able to thrive. And ultimately, that's what we want to be able to give back to our people, is to be able to do that. But in order to do that, you have to be able to heal. Whatever it is that you go into, whenever you come back in those damaged spaces, tomorrow is going to require you to be at your best again. So it's of utmost importance that you heal. But if you don't, then you only allow yourself the ability to cope and survive. And to really bring that term of survival to the table, you know, it really speaks to that understanding of just getting by until the next day, just getting by another hour, just being able to scrape by with the pain enough that you can feel good for just a little bit longer. But, you know, I know that our ancestors and our people that put forth all of this effort for us to be here today, they didn't, you know, sneak off the reservation at night to hold their ceremonies so that we could just get by. You know, those songs and those prayers were intentions to be able to say, I want these great-grandchildren that I don't even know their name, that I haven't felt their breath yet, I want them to be able to live fully. I want them to know the life that we came from, you know, to be able to have that kind of universal grounding in their cultural understanding. You know, that's what it looks like to thrive, to have no question about your being and your purpose and your worth in living here. And one of the reasons why we see so much of these adversities within our communities is because that's what's been taken away from our understanding. You know, we grow up in environments where there's extreme prejudice and racism. And, you know, we even had, national, federal doctrines put into place to be able to say that eliminate them. You know, at all costs, eliminate them. And if you can't physically take their lives, then you take their culture, you take their ability to be well from them, and then you kind of leave an empty shell, you know? So
what happens on the other side of this? You've seen healing take place. You've seen a culture transform somebody's daily life and a community. What's the potential here with, so many people healing, so many people, you know, recognizing what happened and saying, and now it's time to put that energy into something, that is better than just getting by.
You see tremendous change. And I think, you know, in my own personal experience, I would say going through this healing process, you know, part of the intention was for me to create something better for my children, you know, not wanting them to continue to see them suffer. But then it also opened up for me a realization that I need this healing as well, you know, and that became a part of the mission of, I want to be well. I want to know what it's like to live in that space. But as I did, it was something that radiated throughout my family in both directions, from my children and my nieces and nephews underneath me, to my parents, to my grandparents, to aunts and uncles, and even outward into my community. as it began to happen, you know, these conversations began to start and people began to open up and say, you know, wow, you know, there really is something here. There are things that have been operating within my family and with even just within my own understanding that I was entirely unaware was affecting my day-to-day life or how it was that I'm raising my children or how it is that I behave in relationships, you know. Mm-hmm. So you see so many positive changes begin to take place. You see family relationships begin to improve, healing within families. You see a lot of these people in the spaces of addiction coming to a space of clarity and being able to shake those things off for good rather than, you know, being clean for a few months and then relapsing back into that situation because they're still trying to numb the pain of what they haven't been able to heal. So answering that question as to why did this happen to us, you know, and why did I deserve this is one of the key things, being able to take people and say, you know, this wasn't something that you deserved or that was intentionally given to you. There was something that collectively happened to the whole of your people that took away these good family values and these good cultural values that taught us how to be good husbands and wives and fathers and mothers and community leaders and these kinds of things. And it was never given back to us. And it hasn't even been our past generation's fault for the places that they've stumbled in trying to understand that, you know, and being able to go back and paint that picture to say, let's go all the way back to the time of this initial wall of trauma where people on the other side were able to live fully. What is it that happened here? And being able to realize, you know, there's something in place that that shouldn't have been there. And for myself, that's what the powerful realization was, is that, you know, I was raised in a home where alcoholism wasn't, you know, extremely prevalent or anything. I didn't grow up in a violent home, anything. You know, I had very wonderful parents and I was provided for. But even so, there were certain things that were absent. You know, we had a difficult time in certain instances being able to communicate emotion with one another, you know, yeah. Even just to be able to say, I love you, mom, I love you, dad, or in the opposite direction. Those were difficult conversations, you know, and that's something that we're still continuing to heal from. And that's okay. You know, it wasn't our fault or something that we chose to do, but that's the environment that we grew up in and we didn't know any different, you know. So we're even in our own space today, we're having to train ourselves to do that, you know. Mm-hmm. But it allowed me to understand that I had never been taught to question my upbringing, but as I began to turn and look backwards, I began to realize throughout these generations, there were so many broken and unhealthy things that weren't present in these people's lives. And I realized, you know, those were things that were handed to me, and it drove me to severe depression when I was younger and drove me to the space of being suicidal, even though I didn't realize that's what was going on at the time, you know. And it even began to attribute to my younger daughter, who was had, you know, she was completely oblivious to all of those things, but it drove her to the point of severe depression and suicidal ideation as well, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's what happens when it's not dealt with. But on the opposite side, you know, just the opening of those conversations brings about so many opportunities for healing in so many things that are hindering our community from inside the home to out into society. And you know, it's tremendous. You know, it's been an amazing journey and an amazing process to see the way that it changes people's lives. Mm.
Jeremy Fields is with Thrive Unlimited. We'll put a link up to his website on our website after the program at listen.sdpb.org, and you can attend the final session dealing with the impact of trauma in the Serbeck Center Ballroom on the campus of South Dakota School of Mines and Technology, that event sponsored by the University's Center for Inclusion and the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. Jeremy Fields, would you like to leave anybody with other ways they can follow your work or connect with you other than your website, social media, or other places?
Absolutely, yes. You know, our website, of course, but then we also are, you know, present on social media. On Instagram is at Thrive, UNLTD, and then also on Facebook as Thrive, UNLTD as well. You can find us there and kind of stay up to date with what we're doing. And, you know, I just encourage everybody to, you know, if you're available, come out to tomorrow evening from 6 to 8. You know, we had a tremendous response on, you know, hosting part one. As part two comes around, we're expecting it to be just as wonderful. So,
Jeremy, thank you so much. Come back anytime.
Absolutely. Thank you as well.